Radio. Adam, as always, a pleasure to have you on. How are you this afternoon?
Doing well, Andy. How about you?
So far, so good. And, well, there's a lot to talk about today, and that's not necessarily something that we said over the last few months here as the sports world slowly gets back to whatever that new normal might be. And I want to begin by examining some of the betting odds for the NHL's proposed 2014 playoff. Now, they will start to return to practice here very soon, and hopefully they'll be back on the ice before we know it. What odds really kind of stand out to you in this picture?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, especially the format that they're looking to go with here. As you mentioned, 24 teams, and you've got the top four seeds in each conference are guaranteed to advance to the first round. They'll play each other in kind of a round-robin format to determine seeding. And the other teams, they'll play each other in a five-game play-in round. The winners will then advance to playing in the first round. So when you look at the futures market out there right now, those four top teams in each conference, of course, have the shortest odds to win the Stanley Cup because they're guaranteed to advance to that first round. All the other teams have to win the best of five just to get into the best of seven round for the first round. So right now, as you look out there on the board, Tampa Bay, Boston, Vegas, Colorado, the top teams in the NHL, those are your lowest priced teams, anywhere from about 6-1 to about 9-1. Then you start to get into some really interesting prices. One of the interesting ones to me, a team that's got some local flair to it here, the Pittsburgh Penguins are 12-1, and the Penguins have the shortest price of any of the teams that have to play in that play-in round. So I think that's a little bit optimistic of a price tag for them, especially because you know they're probably going to beat Montreal, but how much does it take out of them? We're not really sure. And obviously one of the big questions going into the 2014 playoff is, you know, if there is a positive COVID-19 test, and I'm sure there will be, at some point in time, is it a star player? Is it a role guy? Is it a starting goaltender? You know, who it could be could dictate what happens in these series depending on who these teams wind up losing. So I think people will be very cautious and very tentative with these odds until we get, you know, maybe a clearer picture of how these teams are going to look.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I'm sure that's something that's going to be discussed not only in hockey but in all sports as well. And, you know, while we're on the topic, you mentioned Pittsburgh with a lot of local flair as far as the NHL goes around here. What kinds of odds are we looking at with the Columbus Blue Jackets? Kind of on the other end of the spectrum, because I feel like around here, you either love the Penguins and you hate the Jackets, or vice versa. You either love the Jackets and hate the Penguins.
Well, as you look at Columbus here, they're in the 8-9 play-in round series. They'll play against the Toronto Maple Leafs. The winner of that one will take on the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. And, I mean, the number one seed may not be deserving. It all depends on what happens with that little round-robin tournament with the four top teams. For example, if it's Philadelphia, that's a lot different than playing Boston or Tampa Bay. So, you know, maybe Columbus and Toronto do kind of catch a little bit of a break, depending on what happens with that round robin. But right now, Toronto minus 160 favorite is what I'm seeing out there over Columbus in that best of five. That's plus 140 on Columbus. Implies about a 42% probability that the Blue Jackets win the series. And quite frankly, I think that's a little bit low. I mean, this is a Columbus team where the goaltending is a question, and the goaltending will be a question for all of these teams here coming off the long layoff. But Columbus lost a ton of man games. They had a lot of injuries during the regular season. Now they're going to be healthy. They've got a very good coach in John Tortorella. I think I'm not going to say it's a coin flip, but I think it's closer to, you know, maybe Columbus plus 120, plus 125, something like that. I do think there's some value for them to advance. What happens if they advance, then I'm not really sure. It all depends on who they play.
Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, I want to transition into some golf talk. I know we're already into the second day at the Charles Schwab Challenge down in Texas, but just kind of curious as to what kinds of interesting trends that you noticed in the betting markets before they got going yesterday, because it's so fun for me to watch this, but I know betting markets certainly have a tendency to change going into an event like this because there's at least a little bit of unpredictability not knowing what kind of golf shape these guys are going to be in playing for the first time in almost 3 months.
Yeah, it is really tough, and to be honest with you, looking at the scores that we've seen here through the first two rounds, it looks like the PGA Tour took it a little bit easy on these guys. We've seen a few guys go out and post 63s, 64s. It seems like they kind of gave them a little bit of favor with the pin placements and some of the conditions, maybe the rough cut down a little bit shorter than we would have normally seen in this event. In terms of the betting action, we've seen a ton of betting action, quite frankly. A lot of people betting players to win this tournament, matchup betting head-to-head, that's been very, very popular here as well. And the interesting thing about golf betting is that each individual course is tailored to a certain type of player. And with a course like this down at Colonial, this isn't really a course for the bombers. I mean, Rory is in the top five right now, so maybe that kind of goes against what I'm about to say here. But this is a course where hitting fairways and making putts has really led to a lot of wins. Zach Johnson's won here twice. Justin Rose, not a guy that hits it a ton. He's a very good putter. Kevin Na, a very good putter. So the guys that are doing well here so far over the first 2 days have made a lot of putts. They've done a very good job of reading the greens, having the right paces, and that was kind of a question coming into this tournament with a lot of these guys probably trying to find that rhythm once they get to the green. So, like, Harold Varner III leads right now. I would not expect that to carry over through the weekend. Jordan Spieth playing very well. When he putts well, Jordan Spieth is a world-class type of player. But Rory posting a 63 here in the second round, going 7-under, moving about 35 spots up the board. That's got to strike some fear in the guys that are currently first and second in this tournament or the guys that are tied for third. So I think Rory continues that big push and maybe finally gets that elusive win here this year where he's had six top fives but no wins.
Well, you started talking about some of those scores early on there, talking about these guys shooting in the 60s, and that really kind of reminded me of the display that you put on when you and I went golfing with Joel Hammond, friend of show, last summer. That was a lot of fun, but that was very reminiscent of the game that you displayed shooting in the 60s.
Yeah, 60s over the first nine. Yeah, that's what you did.
Adam Burke, bangthebook.com, Bang the Book Radio, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, let's get into some UFC talk here for all of our fighting fans out there. Who do you like on tomorrow night's card at UFC Fight Night 172?
Yeah, this is, sad to say, this is probably about the weakest card the UFC has had here so far since they returned. Not really a big surprise. They got a decent card next week, and then obviously UFC 251 has a really, really strong card. The main event, local flair here, Jessica I trains over at, I believe it's called Strong Style, over on the Brooklyn Heights Independence border, same place that Stipe Miocic trains at. She's the underdog now in the main event. That was kind of a pick'em type of fight when I wrote up a preview earlier on in the week at bangthebook.com. Now her opponent, Cynthia Calvillo, she's now minus 130, Jessica I plus 110. That one's probably going to go to the judges, but it is going to go probably the full 25 minutes. The championship rounds are in play for that main event. And that's something that you kind of worry about here with a couple of fighters that aren't used to going that extra 10 minutes. They're used to the 3 5-minute rounds. Now they got to go 25 minutes. Jessica I has gotten to where she is because she's got an extremely good gas tank, a lot of endurance, wins a lot of decisions. I understand why the line is moving against her, but I do think that she's a pretty live dog there in that main event. I think Marvin Vettori against Carl Roberson, that's probably one of the best betting options on the board here. I think Vettori at minus 210, I think that price is a little bit light for him. I think he's in pretty good shape there. As far as the rest of the card goes, not a ton of great betting value. Like I said, not the best of cards. You got some newer fighters on the undercard. Hannah Cyphers, she's plus 285 because she's coming back on about a two-week turnaround. She just fought a couple of weeks ago and lost. She's fighting against the UFC newcomer, Maria Agapova. That's probably going to be a pretty quick fight there, I would think, with Agapova winning. So not a ton of value. There are some bigger favorites that I kind of like on the card, but obviously anything can happen with one punch.
Well, I realize we've kind of gone all over the place so far in this interview, starting with the NHL, going to golf, to USC. We're going to take another turn here and take a look at the NBA. And as far as the NBA goes, are you seeing any interesting movement in the betting markets leading up to this late July restart?
Well, I don't mind jumping around. I mean, I cover a lot of stuff over at bangthebook.com, so it's fine with me. But the biggest news, I mean, the biggest movement that we've had in the NBA here today is that now there are some questions about the employees, the personnel that will be there down at the Disney complex. There's some questions as to whether or not they will be, sort of kept in that protective bubble, kept in quarantine. So Now the players kind of voicing some of their displeasure out there on social media. If we get this thing, and I'm sure they'll figure it out here at some point, Lakers are still the favorite, plus 225, Clippers plus 300, Milwaukee Bucks plus 325. You know, we don't know exactly what this is going to look like, exactly what the format's going to be. Will there be days off? You know, if there are any back-to-backs at all, that obviously hurts a team like the Clippers with Kawhi Leonard, would hurt a team like the 76ers where they take it pretty easy with Joel Embiid. Right now, we haven't seen a whole lot of movement here because, again, like I talked about with the NHL, you know, they're going to be positive tests. It just all depends on which players pop the positive tests. I mean, if the Lakers, you know, God forbid LeBron gets a positive test, what happens to their futures chances? Well, they plummet. So right now, a lot of people just kind of holding off a little bit. They're betting golf. They're betting UFC. They're betting Korean baseball and NASCAR and all those types of things. Not a whole lot of movement yet, but I would assume, you know, maybe 2 weeks out or so, we start to see some people kind of betting on the NBA and also the NHL as well.
Well, we can close out by taking another turn here and taking a look at Major League Baseball. And it just seems like this soap opera doesn't have an end. And if it does finally come to a conclusion, we don't know how peaceful it's going to be in this ongoing battle between the players' union and the owners. Not long ago, the owners made the offer official, whereas it'll be a 72-game season with players receiving 70% of prorated salaries for the regular season. It could go up to 80% if the postseason is completed. Adam, just kind of curious to get your thoughts on what's gone down so far in these negotiations and if you think the chances are good that they can avoid a 48-game season, which could be implemented by Commissioner Rob Manfred next week. Just seems like that would be a disaster.
Yeah, this is a disaster all the way around. I mean, you look at the MLB and the offers that they keep making, and they basically keep packaging together the same offer, just in a different way. And I don't know how they expect the players' union to, you know, not figure this out. I mean, it's all over social media that every one of these MLB proposals has been very, very similar. And, you know, I'm trying not to take sides in this whole thing. I understand the plight of the owners. I understand what the players are trying to get out of this as well. My personal belief is you just, you know, bang this season, you just punt this season and figure out the CBA. Figure everything out so that you don't have a labor stoppage. Because if you go back-to-back years with either a shortened season or no season, what happens to the future of Major League Baseball? Will the fans come back? You know, we talked about the 94 strike and all that. If it wasn't for, you know, the steroid era, and then you get the big home run chase with McGuire and Sosa, that brought a lot of baseball fans and a new generation of baseball fans to the game. What happens now with everything else that's going on, all the different sports that are out there? Now you talk about things like esports and all those kinds of things. People are just going to do other stuff with their time. I don't know if they'll come back to Major League Baseball, at least not, you know, with the viewership that they have now. So that's going to hurt TV deals. That's going to hurt probably player salaries and hurt a lot of other things. So I think they should stop this 2020 charade, figure things out for the future, kind of the greater good here of Major League Baseball, so to speak, and just, you know, stop. Because right now the court of public opinion is against both sides, really. And that's a really bad position to be in. If one side was a villain and one side was a hero and the fans were siding with one side over the other, that would be fine. But right now, a lot of the fans seem to be split kind of down the middle or apathetic, which is the worst case scenario. So I don't know. I would stop trying for 2020 and just make sure that you start, you know, the end of March with 2021 and don't have any labor interruptions going forward.
Very well stated. And I think you mentioned the magic word there. I think apathy has already set in with a lot of different fans, and I think they're just so disappointed in what they have seen here because it seems like both sides are only interested in negotiating through the media, which, as we both know, is the wrong way about going about things. And to your point, too, about all the alternatives that exist today that did not exist back in the mid to late 90s, and it's interesting we discussed this because the ESPN 30 for 30 coming out on Sunday, the long gone summer, talking about the summer of 98 and the battle between McGuire and Sosa, how cool that was to follow. But you're right, that worked then, who knows what it would take to get a lot of these fans back now. I think they've got to do everything they can to, well, as you said, either just scrap this season and work towards something different next year, or at least salvage some of the season. I just think 48 games would be absolutely absurd, and I think you'll agree that there are just too many fluky possibilities with a season that short.
That's the problem. At this point in time, even 72 is kind of pushing it, where people are just going to say, well, this season's kind of a joke. It's subject to complete variance. You're going to be going up against the NHL and the NBA playoffs, which they have expanded. They've found a way to be creative to, bring a lot of intrigue to the table. And furthermore, with the NBA and the NHL having to push their playoffs back, probably start their next regular season in December, all of a sudden Major League Baseball isn't the only game in town in the summer anymore. And the NBA was even talking about doing this, saying, we don't want to go up against the NFL. We don't want to go up against all the holidays. We'll start in late December, and we'll play through the spring and into the summer. That was going to take dollars and viewers away from Major League Baseball to begin with. So, like I said, I think they should focus more on the long-term health of the game, of the league, of the marketing of the game, because if the NBA does modify its regular season and start playing after Christmas Day, that's another strike against Major League Baseball, even if they're able to play games next year.
Absolutely. As we've said before, Kent Sterling, who does afternoons in Indianapolis, mentioned this on Twitter a couple of days ago. Both sides seem to be way too concerned with getting their slice, and they're not really worried about what else is going on with the entire pie. Very, very disappointing for sure. Adam, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Absolutely. Take care, Andy.
Thanks, Adam. You do the same. That's Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio.